The court will go on to the next case of the day, which is Tegra Corporation versus Bozart. I am recused from this matter, and the court will be joined by Judge Pete Battalion of Douglas County. So please give me a moment to get in and to get out of the courtroom, and a moment for him to get into the courtroom. And I believe that Justice Castle is going to preside.
You may be seated while we're waiting. Justice Miller Lerman, as the senior associate justice, would ordinarily preside, but because she is appearing via WebEx, she's asked me to preside, which I will be happy to do. We've now been joined by Judge Peter Battalion of the District Court of the 4th Judicial District. And Mr. Watson, you may approach and you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Matt Watson. I represent the appellant, Tegra Corporation. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time, please. The appellant is a minority interest holder in a limited liability company by the name of Lightform Technologies, LLC. The appellees, Patrick and Sandra Bozart, are the manager and collectively the majority interest holders in that company. In 2019, appellant discovered that the appellees, the Bozarts, had engaged in acts of self-dealing with the company. When that type of situation occurs, the only way that a minority interest holder in a closely held LLC can protect the company is through what's known as a derivative action. It's bringing a lawsuit on behalf of the company.
Now, when you filed your complaint, you certainly asserted a derivative action, but didn't you also assert some claim individually? And how would that exist under the facts asserted in your complaint? Or is it purely, do you concede, maybe the simple version, do you concede for purposes of the appeal that what is before us is purely a derivative action?
It's the latter, Your Honor. What we have strictly before the court are the claims related to the derivative action, because the Special Litigation Committee only had authority over those claims, not the individual claim, which simply related to a request for information from the company that we felt had not been complied with. So this appeal deals with the enforcement of the appellant's right to pursue a derivative action on behalf of the company, and the district court's failure to protect that right when it failed to follow 21-168 of the LLC Act. Now, that statute deals with the appointment of what's known as a Special Litigation Committee, or SLC. What
was
it allows...
Was the process of appointment followed precisely here? And if it wasn't, what's the effect of that?
The process of appointment was followed here. The manager of the company under the statute has the authority, even when the manager is a defendant, like is the case here, to appoint a Special Litigation Committee, or an SLC. And the purpose of that is it allows, it's supposed to be then an independent process, that you have somebody rather than those who are conflicted, like the manager of the company who's been named a defendant, for making a decision as to what's in the best interest of the company. And that's what the statute
I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller Lerman. Assume in this question that the process for appointing the committee was okay and they proceeded in good faith and so forth. In what respect do you believe the district court exceeded its authority under 21-168 sub E? Did the district court issue an order that exceeded the statutory parameters?
It did, Your Honor. So if we put aside the issues that we've assigned as error regarding the determinations of good faith and reasonable care, and we get straight to the recommendation, the district court in this case, pursuant to the statute, it was required really to only do one thing, and that's to determine whether or not the SLC satisfied its burden of proving it was independent, and then its investigation and recommendation were made in good faith and with reasonable care. The recommendation that the SLC can make under the statute is one of four options. And here, the district court determined that the option that was selected was settlement approved by terms of the committee. But the SLC didn't make a recommendation of settlement terms that have been approved. What it recommended here was, frankly, an uncertain and conflicted process. The SLC recommended that the district court allow it to continue an investigation to provide additional information to the members of the company. And then rather than himself independently determine what's in the best interest of the company, the SLC proposed that the members of the company, including the Bossarts, who are clearly conflicted, determine how the claims should proceed. It was error for the district court to determine that that recommendation qualified as settlement of terms approved by the committee under the statute. And even if it did, even if that was considered a settlement, that recommendation fails for a more fundamental purpose. The whole purpose of a derivative proceeding is to insulate those who have been accused from wrongdoing from having a say in what's in the best interest of the company.
Ultimately, the situation, the way the court handled it, he send it away to see if settlement could occur and then invite them to come back for approval of that later?
That's what the court did, and the court exceeded its authority in doing that. The statute is very clear. As I mentioned, the only thing the court is authorized to do is to determine whether or not the SLC satisfied its burden.
But the way the court has done it in the situation, when that comes back, if those recommendations for the SLC are, just for hypothetical purposes, are preposterous, couldn't the court still find that he was not acting independently in good faith and acting reasonably at that point when that comes back?
The court's duty to make that determination was when we presented this issue at the hearing.
No, but I'm saying, couldn't it still revise that when the recommendation comes back the second time?
If the court determines that the district court was allowed to allow it to progress that far, then yes, that's correct. But it's our position that under the statute, it can't progress that far. And the primary reason why it was...
I beg your pardon. I am asking, if you don't mind my interruption, to stick to the language of the statute in D3, if I'm correct, that the matter be settled on terms approved by the committee. So that suggests something has been presented to the committee by someone rather than the language that could have been used, be settled on terms, say, developed by the committee. So the farming out of terms, is that anticipated by the language of D3?
If you look at, for example, the Kokosinski case that's been cited to in both briefs, that provides an example of the type of settlement that's contemplated. It has to be something definitive brought to the court. Otherwise, there's really no recommendation at all. Because if the recommendation, like it is here, is that, well, we want the members to decide, which, as I said, is fundamentally improper, it's conflicted, then there really is nothing concrete being recommended. Because after that member meeting occurs, you may not have a settlement. Or what if the members decide that, yeah, we think we should hold the manager and the majority members accountable, but they say, well, we don't want to settle. Then where are we?
That gets to Justice Funk's question about, is this a final appealable order? Your case mm-hmm. hasn't been dismissed, correct?
Correct.
You haven't, the court hasn't ordered the litigation to proceed as directed by the committee.
Correct.
It hasn't done any of this. Subsections A through D, has it?
If it hasn't,
do we have a final appealable order?
And you do have a final appealable order, because when you look at the statute, as I've mentioned several times, the district court is solely supposed to determine one thing. Did the SLC satisfy its burden of showing independence, good faith, and reasonable care? The district court, once it makes that determination, it then has a binary decision. It must either accept or reject the recommendation. It did all of that here. Where the district court erred is it tried to go beyond that. It accepted the recommendation, but then attempted to modify it. That modification goes beyond the statutory authority that the district court has under 21-168. Once it accepted the determination, and it's very clear from pages 5 and 6 of the order that it did, everything, all issues presented before the district court in 21-168 were disposed of.
I beg your pardon. Is your position that the order in front of us is a separate, somehow independent action within the main action, therefore appealable?
Yes, it's an independent special proceeding that arises out of an underlying civil action.
Does the SLC have anything else to do after this?
In our opinion, no. The SLC made its recommendation.
So the mediation is going to go back to the SLC or to the court, or do we know?
The court said the parties are to mediate. And if I can underscore one issue we have with that, and the court recognized that what the SLC had proposed was improper. He just tried to fix it. The court was not permitted to do that. And the court is not allowed to interject itself in an SLC's process. That's a corporate governance issue. When the court attempted to do that, again, it exceeded its authority.
We kind of skipped over this issue, but was the SLC reasonable and independent? Did they do their responsibilities on the statute?
In my very limited time on the issue, no. The investigation didn't even come close to satisfying what's a reasonable and good faith investigation. If I just may provide one example. The primary allegation of wrongdoing here were related party equipment leases, where the Bozarts caused the company to lease equipment from their wholly owned entities without disclosure at a substantial upcharge. We were aware of 7 of those leases when we brought the derivative action. It turned out there's more that the SLC never investigated. He didn't ask a single question about those leases. He didn't ask the Bozarts one question. He didn't ask why the company didn't purchase the equipment. He didn't ask what the business justification was. If you look at the case law, what it indicates is when you have that kind of lack of investigation, it's what the case law says is an execution or an investigation so shallow in form and so pro forma in execution. That's exactly what occurred here. And so the district court also erred in determining that the SLC met its burden, and it's the SLC's burden here to show that its investigation was conducted in good faith and reasonable care.
Mr. Watson, I'd like to ask you hypothetically, if the Committee of One had come back and said the action should continue under the control of the plaintiff, would that have been a final appealable order?
I think it would have. If you look at the case law, and there's one caveat I have here. I think it would, because if you look at the Kramer case, and that indicates that when you have an independent special proceeding, which I think we clearly do here, when you have an order that disposes of all issues, and in that circumstance, the order would dispose of all issues, that's a final appealable order. The only caveat I have is I don't know that there's really any substantial rights involved there, because it's the defendants at that point would presumably be the appealing party, and they don't have the right of a derivative action, which is really the substantial right at issue in the special litigation committee proceeding.
That takes us circles back then to where I sort of began with you. In the derivative action, doesn't the substantial right belong to the corporation?
The substantial right in this circumstance belongs to the derivative plaintiff to bring the action on behalf of the company.
Well, if we disagree, where does that take us?
It still takes us to a spot where all issues presented in this independent special proceeding have been disposed of. And I think under Kramer, and I think even under Webb, when we deal with motion to compel arbitration cases, when that motion has been determined, whichever way, it's a final appealable order.
Thank you very much. Any other questions?
Thank you.
How long did we take the appellant over?
2 minutes and 36 seconds.
Here. We'll add that to the appellee's time. You may proceed. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Scott Jockum, and I represent defendants appellees Patrick and Sandra Bozarth, who are here with me today, along with Bozarth Management LLC and Pat Bozarth Construction LLC, defendants in this case. I think there are 3 questions that really are presented to you today on this appeal. The first one we think is dispositive. Does this court have jurisdiction? It's an entry level question that should be addressed first. This is an appeal from an order dated June 21 of 2021. In that order, Judge Meismer accepted, as we talked about, the SLC's determination in this case that the claims, the remaining claims after he had issued his report, which we believe to be minor, and I think he even indicated were, in his opinion, immaterial from a business perspective, be settled on terms approved by him. The court accepted that in compliance with Section 21-168E. In entering this June 21st order, however, the court indicated that the party should mediate the case.
Is it arguable that court made the findings to a degree, but then sent the parties on further tasks to come back with terms of a settlement?
Correct. In fact, the order very specifically says that the SLC is required to report back. The court set it for a status hearing.
And then the court would be in its full right at that point when it came back on those terms to make its determination upon independence and so forth.
Absolutely.
And so if that's the case, I think you're going to say this is in the final orders where you're leading us to. The next question I go to, when would be the appropriate time to appeal under the settlement portion of 21-168?
Settlement is fluid and so it's flexible. I think a lot of times on what terms approved by the committee, the committee tried to outline those terms. The court gave the parties the opportunity to try to mediate to settle these issues, barring which, or at the outcome after which the SLC then could report and make further recommendations, as the court's order indicated, pursuant to the statute. So the way that we read the order is that it's not a final appealable order. There's still work to be done.
So it's your contention the SLC is still viable and still has duties to report back to the court with a recommendation?
Absolutely.
Well, Mr. Jockum, aren't we outside the statute a little bit here? I mean, wasn't the district court has to to make these decisions with regard to the SLC? They never made the decision as of that he acted with reasonable care, did he?
He did not
saw that language at all.
He did not specifically use those words.
And so doesn't he have isn't the district court now has to make a decision on this report and has to make a final order on the report, whether it's reasonable or not, which he hasn't done. And how can he order now mediation when he doesn't have the authority to order mediation when you're in the middle of this order with regard to accepting or denying the SLC report?
That's a good question. I think Judge Meisner was creatively looking at how can we get this case resolved. He's accepting, the way I interpret the order was that he was accepting the recommendation that the case be settled on terms approved by the committee. My read of that order is that the SLC would be actively involved in the mediation portion of it. And then
that's outside the statute, isn't it? That they can be actively involved in mediation? Don't they just have to give recommendations to the court?
It's hard to say. I mean, the language is it be settled on terms approved by the committee. I think that's forward looking to some extent to give some flexibility, as I mentioned, to settle. So there's got to be some flexibility there. Very clearly, the judge, Judge Meisner, did not say case dismissed or I'm disposing of all the issues here. And we think that this is clearly not a final appealable order, that the party should proceed to comply with his order to mediate. And I think there's a separate statutory structure for judges to require mediations.
We can always require mediation, but in this sense, that's not part of his ability, is it? While he's still making a decision as to whether to accept or reject the SLC report?
I don't know. I do think that courts are given broad discretion to order mediations at various stages. Here, it is interesting in the context of this, and I think he was trying to facilitate the SLC's recommendations that it be settled, that he accepted. So with that in mind, we have a cross appeal that's filed. If the court finds jurisdiction here, that we believe the statutory language to be mandatory, that once Judge Meisner finds the factors that are set forth in 21-168E, including reasonable care, which I agree is not in the order, I think by the virtue of him accepting it, he found that. Especially by citing the terms and saying that this was an accountant who actually did his job. I think there's some language in there that this is what you would reasonably expect a forensic accountant to do in this situation, which I think is reasonable care, but he didn't use those particular words. Once the court makes those findings, at the conclusion of what he's indicated is still ongoing efforts to settle on terms approved by the committee, then I think you have a final order to come back here and argue as to whether or not it was a final order.
Hypothetically, if the committee of one had said that the case should be dismissed and the trial judge said, yep, that's reasonable, fair, and dismissed, everyone would agree that would be a final order, right?
Correct.
If, on the other hand, the committee of one said it ought to continue in the control of the plaintiff, is that a final? And the court again says, yeah, fair, reasonable, adopt the recommendation.
No, I would not think in that situation it would be, because the case is ongoing. There are still issues to be resolved in the case at that point. A dismissal of all issues is an appealable order. Anything else that leaves something remaining, something yet to be done, is not.
So you would take the position that the type one recommendation is perhaps never a final order. The type four recommendation is always a final order. What about the types two continue under the control of the committee? Again, probably not a final order.
Correct.
And the type three?
Type three, again, I would say it's not a final order, as I've been arguing, in that I guess if the court said the parties had reached a settlement and they come back to the court says, I'm accepting those terms of settlement and now I'm dismissing the case. I think at that point it'll be a final order. We're not there yet here. We still have work to do, as the court said. Court still believes that Cody Karst, the committee of one, as you mentioned, is still obligated to come back and make further recommendations under this particular statutory scheme, which could involve dismissal at that point. And if it does, then there's an appealable order at that point, should the appellant wish to appeal it. But I think they're premature. I think this is a premature appeal.
If the first two options are not appealable immediately, does that mean that the entire litigation goes through either under the control of the plaintiff or under the control of the SLC, however, wherever that takes, years and everything like that, and then that gets appealed at the end, and we can potentially roll that, all that litigation, all the way back to that decision to say that wasn't an independent decision?
Yes, I think so. That's the definition of a final order, is that at that point, everything, there's nothing remaining. There's nothing left to be done. And I think this court discourages piecemeal appeals, and so therefore has required those final orders be entered before an appeal like this is filed.
Wouldn't, in the hypothetical posed by Justice Frydenberg, most of the time, wouldn't the issues have become moot by the litigation that breaches the merits?
You know, that's a good question. Some of these cases, I mean, for example, you have a discovery dispute. That has to wait. And let's say one party believes that's a material issue, or, you know, something that's dispositive to their case. They've got to wait until trial and a final order before they can appeal that. They don't get to prematurely appeal that issue just because they believe that's something that they should get, you know, timely consideration on. So I would suggest that it's akin to that situation where it seems like a long time to wait, but in the system and in the structure of the final orders that are required, that would appear to me to be something that would be required here. Now, I think appellant is arguing this is a special proceeding that in effect affects a substantial right. And so they're arguing that that makes it appealable. We would disagree that this is a special proceeding. We would submit, of course, that this is a part of a larger action, part of a larger derivative action, which the statutory structure allows for the Special Litigation Committee, which is interesting, and this is the first of its kind that I'm aware of in Nebraska. But it's not a standalone special proceeding, in our opinion. Even if you were to assume that it was a special proceeding, as the appellant argues, we don't think that the Judge Meismer's order affects a substantial right, in that it's requiring the parties to continue to settle, to discuss and reach a settlement on terms approved by the committee. And with respect to that, that gives the committee still an obligation to report back to the court on those efforts. So I still don't think that we're here on a final order. I don't think it's an appeal of a special proceeding that an order that affects a substantial right of the appellant.
Let's move on a little. Let's make an assumption for the sake of argument that we have found that this is a final order. And we move to the question of independence of the SLC. Doesn't the recommendation made here kind of giving up its authority back to the majority shareholders of Lightform Tech, isn't that it basically giving up its independence?
No, I don't think so. I mean, First of all, it's not giving up all the claims that have been asserted. If you look at the determination, there are a lot of issues that are disposed of by the committee saying these are non-issues. The way I read the report is that the limited immaterial issues that remain after that report are items that the committee thought were best handled by the members of the company.
But it appeared from the report, didn't it, that the SLC oftentimes was taking the position that, well, that's not my decision to make their business. They are the best people to know how to run their business. It's their business. But that's absolutely contrary to the whole theory behind an SLC, isn't it?
It sounds that way, but upon his deposition and testimony over 2 days, Mr. Karst confirmed that if they weren't able to agree on terms that he approved of, he would report that. He'd have no hesitation reporting that back to the district court judge. So his prior goal was to inform all the members, have them come together and make a business decision, if they could, that was acceptable to him. And just on its face, giving it to the members for a vote, frankly, is a business decision. Because Pat and Sandra Bozart own a majority interest of the company, they still have the right to vote on certain issues that I think this committee found were more business decisions and not issues that were material claims that he thought should proceed.
I beg your pardon. So can you direct the court to items that the committee or the committee of one, where the committee of one rejected the majority's view of reasonable business practice?
I'm not sure I understand your question. Any situation where the committee, I don't think the committee has yet to see what the settlement terms are, because there's been an injunction preventing the committee from, or the members from meeting to vote on those issues.
I beg your pardon. So, so far, what has the committee decided? Certain allegations don't look like they would hold up. Is that a fair statement?
That's one of his conclusions. And
was that true, for example, on the upscaling on the leases? Was that true of, I don't know, luxury vehicles? Was that true of the various decisions with which the plaintiff took issue? Was there something where the committee rejected the claimed reasonableness by the majority?
That hasn't happened yet, because again, there hasn't been a vote taken place on those issues that were sent back to the committee.
I'm sorry. Has the committee opined on anything to this point?
It has, and its report it suggests requiring or recommending that the remaining issues not otherwise disposed of in the report, for example, like the luxury leases you mentioned, financial mismanagement, he found none of that. He found that one of the question transactions had been fully reversed, and so limited issues as to interest potentially during the time that it wasn't reversed. Those things, I think, are disposed of within the report. And so, yes, the committee's made substantial determinations.
And with respect, I'm sorry. So with respect to the determinations that have been made, could you direct us to those items where the majority was not successful?
The remaining items that he sent back for vote by the members would be any interest that would accrue on the reversed transaction and lease transactions that were self-interested transactions with the management company. And those issues, the LLC operating agreement does permit for those transactions. Mr. Karst did find that some were above market value, and so he's sending those back for a member vote. As we stand here right now, we don't know whether or not the Bozarts would vote to change that. After being in a lawsuit for this long, they very well could have disinterested votes at that meeting. If they don't, and if it's in disagreement with the committee, Mr. Karst, he said he would have no hesitation going back to the district court and informing the court of that, at which point I think an order could be entered as to whether the case proceeds with the plaintiff at the helm, or the appellant in this matter at the helm, or whether he proceeds himself to proceed with whatever additional actions he believes necessary. So I think we're still here speculating on what would happen on those remaining items. I hope that answers your question. I know I'm out of time.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hearing none, how much time did we take? Thank you, Mr.
2 minutes and 42 seconds.
Very well. You have 2 minutes and 42 seconds for rebuttal.
For the additional time, Justice. One of the things I just want to emphasize again is on this issue of a final order. If you look at the Janssen case out of the Minnesota Supreme Court that we cite to, that deals with a similar circumstance where the SLC didn't get it right the first time, didn't do a sufficient investigation and recommendation, attempted to then do a do-over and came back. And the court was very clear that this circumstance, it doesn't allow for a do-over. There's a lot of speculation about what may or may not happen down the road. That's the problem here. The SLC had an obligation to provide a definitive recommendation to the court. Because it didn't, and because the court didn't outright reject it, but attempted to modify it, what we've ended up here now is the chance for the SLC to do a second investigation and then provide a second recommendation to the court. Statute doesn't even hint at that being a possibility. And I'd also ask the court to consider this. So Mr. Karst, the SLC, he's now been deposed by me, examined by me over a 2-day hearing. He has accused the appellants of questioning his professional integrity. To allow him then to continue after this adversarial process to determine what's in the best interest of the company, from just a policy standpoint, that would be fundamentally unfair to the appellant.
Isn't that in our record?
Yes, it is. He was actually specifically questioned by Mr. Jockum about that at the hearing. And so to allow that process to go forward with him at the helm, notwithstanding the fact that it just doesn't comply with the statute, would be unfair to the appellant, who has demonstrated, in our view, that this recommendation shouldn't be adopted.
That would be the district court's decision, though, when he gets the recommendation or the recommendations of the committee to make that, whether he was impartial or not, whether he was affected somehow by this litigation.
Correct. That's a valid point. He absolutely would. I have nothing further. Any other questions?
Thank you very much. The cause is submitted. Counsel are excused, and the court is adjourned for the day.